I am so honored to introduce our in-studio guest, Mr. Bobby Rush. Bobby has had a long career, I would say. At what point are we at 50 years deep or more?
Well, 50 years is being polite. It's more like 63 years been recording. I started recording in 1951. I have 247 records. It's only about 61 or 62 CDs. During that time, there was LPs, 7 or 8 33s, and the whole bit. Way back in the day. Then you come in, so you so young and good looking. All you know about is, you might know about 8-tracks.
I do know about 8-tracks. I never had an 8-track player. It was slightly before my time.
And the tapes.
Yes.
And then now the discs and the whole bit, you know.
I'm more of a fan of the records, the vinyl.
Oh, you're into vinyl stuff?
Yeah, I actually don't have any CDs in my house. I only listen to vinyl in my house.
Oh, great. Yeah. Well, you're a collector of that. But yeah. Because you're in radio, maybe. Not because you're old enough to know about it. You're just curious. You're just curious.
I just love records. Yeah. So Bobby's originally from Louisiana, eventually moving to Arkansas, and then in Chicago, where he met his neighbor, some guy named Muddy Waters.
Yes, the Howlin' Wolf.
How fortuitous, along with Muddy, Howlin' Wolf, Etta James, and Jimmy Reed became his immediate peer circle and started touring on a regular circuit with those folks. Yeah. That must have been a very formative time. Yeah, how old were you around that time when you met
those
them?
Those guys was old, man. They were like 22 and 23. I was like 17, 18. They was old, you know. Now, I remember the Muddy Waters. He was on his 33 years old. He had a birthday party. In Chicago, and he invited me to a birthday party, and I forgot his birthday party. He was so crazy about me and old bit. And by 10:30, I went by the birthday party, and the party was over. And they said, "Bobby Rush might have been waiting on you, man. He's upstairs. He was upstairs.
Ooh.
He had about 10 or 15 ladies up there. They had them little short dresses on, and there was old lady. I asked the lady, "How old are you?" She said, "I'm 26." The other lady said, "I'm 34." I sneaked out the back door. Them old 34 years old ladies. I wish I could have another birthday party today like that with 33.
I bet. So yeah. You recently put together a box set looking back at the history of your career entitled Chicken Heads after the song that was one of your first big hits.
Right.
I'm curious about the process of, you know, going through and curating that set and putting that music together. I just would imagine that would elicit kind of a range of emotions.
Well,
and was there anything surprising about compiling your body of work for you?
The only thing surprised me about the whole thing was the sound of it, because some of the stuff that I've done, that I did way back in the day, you're talking almost 60 years later with some of this stuff, 55 and 60 years later, and it didn't sound good to me, you know, because to me it was like incomplete. The vocals wasn't did right to me, and just half played. I said, no, we'll put that in the can. We'll do something else later. I'll go back and clean this up. But the modern technicians, the stuff they have to clean stuff up with today, it's so fantastic. It just cleaned it up, and I listened to it. I said, wow.
So it was mainly production values were bothering you, elements of the mastering and that sort of thing?
Well, you know, when you're recording, if you're like me, nothing I do never right. It's never good enough.
Perfectionist.
You know? And so, but when the guys did it and showed it to me and let me hear it, I was looking for, I don't want to hear that, but as I listened to it, the more I enjoyed it. And they did such a great cleanup job and mastering.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just wonderful stuff. And it reminded me of a lot of things I did then. And some of this stuff I hadn't heard in 50 years.
You know,
because I wasn't doing them on the stage because I thought it was something less than something else.
Right.
You know?
Well, when you have almost 300 records, it's understandable that you might forget. Like, oh, I totally forgot about that one.
Yeah.
I'm curious, so much attention gets paid to the bigger names that were your peers as we were talking about Muddy Waters, Etta, Howlin', and all that. Are there any artists that sort of pop to mind that you've worked with over the years that you feel have often been overlooked or undervalued that were in sort of the circle of people that you worked with?
Oh, God, yeah. There have been so many guys. Even a Pine Top Perkin is a keyboard player, played with Muddy Waters. And when he played with Muddy Waters, he was such a great part of that scene. And he didn't get introduced to what he was 75, 80 years
right.
old. He was a part of that recording and the whole bit. And Earl Hooker, mm-hmm. people like that. Luther Allison, who got his, before he passed, because he went to Europe for 20 years because he couldn't make a dent in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody, Freddie King finally got did Hideaway and whole bit. It's a whole lot of guys like that, you know.
Yeah, I bet.
He was someone who was with Howlin' Wolf, a great part of that recording. And nobody never knew about him other than playing with Howlin' Wolf until he was 75 years old.
Right.
You know, and about to check out of here. Someone asked me, so well, Bobby Rush, you've been recording stuff all this time back in the day. We didn't hear about you too lately. Well, my thing was a little bit different from others. I kind of planned my situation because if I know, if I told people I was coming, someone was going to get in the way of my doing. Now, let me tell you, show what I mean, because at that time, you couldn't make it in this business unless you had the big managers, a big records company, the whole bit.
Yeah, to operate within that larger system.
So I own a lot of masters. That's
good.
Why you see a lot of masters that I own, because I was so low key and people thought I didn't know because they thought I didn't know because I didn't say it and speak out. But I knew where I was going with this. I knew that someday I was going to have enough of masters and do enough of good things that I could pass down to my grandkids and great grandchildren and so on and so on. I was looking at that when I was 20 years old.
Oh, that's very, very smart. I'm really glad to hear that, because that's certainly not the story for a lot of artists your age that sold publishing or sold masters. And
you know, I didn't talk about that earlier, but I talk about it now because I know, like, Muddy Water convinced me in 1957 to have a drink. I had 3 beers in my lifetime. I never had a glass of wine for dinner in my life. Never smoked again, never got high, never in my life. But I did so many other things that ain't cool, so it makes up for the things I didn't do in drinking. But I wanted to be aware of what I was doing, and I missed out on a lot of good contracts because I was this blues guy who didn't have a chance to go to school. But when I got 25 and 30 years old, I went back to the read and tried to educate myself in all direction about things, and I was the guy that the most record kind of looked over because they said, no, don't mess with Bobby Rush because he can read and write. So I was the kind of guy who's kind of knew about contracts and whole bit. And so
right.
I was kind of dangerous to deal with because I...
The dangerous power of knowledge.
Right.
That sort of relates to what may be my last question for you, because I know we got to let you get to sound check and all that, and I'm really hoping we can squeeze one little song. But so, because you worked through so many different eras of music, different genres, explored different subgenres, what would you say has remained your most consistent and personally meaningful goal as either an artist or as a performer?
I guess if I hear you just right, what I have going for me that works for me, that I'm still learning, I'm still enthused. Because I know deep down inside, as my travel through life at my age now, a man can live a long time, a woman, without water or food, but you can't live long without hope. I still have hope.
Wow.
And the hope keep me going, because I want to demonstrate to myself first and then display that to others. Follow this, because if you follow my pattern, there's some kind of way you can do it like I do it and even better than I do it and survive the rat race. Because being a blues singer, and on top of that, being a black blues singer, is a hard task. Because when I talk to black guys about in my age bracket and even younger or older, they always talk about, I'm going to record this because I think this is what the white people like. I'm going to record like this because I think this is what black people like. I record good music and hope everyone like it. It's not a black and white issue with me. That's not true with all artists, because most artists have to abide by the record company, the manager, who tell them what and what. I don't have one person to tell me what to do. That's the public who come to see me.
Ah, very good. I like your attitude.
Yeah.
Well, I'm holding out hope that you might play a little harmonica for me. Do you feel up to it? I'm not going to push you.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I didn't bring my guitar. I was going to do it, but I kind of changed my mind because I didn't know how close I was to my sound check. But I want to tell you before I get into this. I'm so blessed to be able to cross over to a white audience, to a Hispanic or what have you. But yet I crossed over and never crossed out. So many peers of mine crossed out. You know, I won't get into name calling. How many guys who 70 years old have a black following? And if they're black musician? Not many. Most of the guys had to go to Europe to get known. I go there too. I go there because I want to, have a choice, but I also have a choice to stay in the U.S. I can go to Beale Street and advertise myself or someone advertise me and pack a crowd on Beale Street. I can also go go to Memphis, Tennessee on a black neighborhood and draw a crowd also. So I'm like two peoples in one. You know?
That's great.
You know? So someone asked me, so, well, why do you sing the blues? Is it because your woman left you? Yes. You can have the blues when your woman leave you. But you can also have the blues if they stay too long.
Well said.
And so that's why I want to do this for you. Have you ever been mistreated by someone you shouldn't have loved? Have you ever been mistreated by someone you shouldn't have loved? Out of all the men my woman could have left me for, she left me for the garbage man. No matter how bad she treated me, I still can't get her loving out of my mind. Well, no matter how bad she treated me, still can't get her loving out of my mind. Every time I see a garbage can, I think about her and the garbage man all the time. If I ever get married again, I'm gonna buy myself a garbage truck. If I ever get married again, people, I'm gonna buy myself a big old garbage truck. When my garbage can get full, I'm gonna take it and dump it way out in the woods. That's the blues for you.
Mr. Bobby Rush here on the home stretch on KXCI. Bobby, the new box set is entitled Chicken Heads, a 50-year history of Bobby Rush. Thanks so much for being here.
Thank
it's been an absolute honor.